Thank you for the introduction, and thank you everyone for attending our session this afternoon. And again, as mentioned, I'll be presenting a secondary data study that looks at youth violence prevalence rates across several years, 1999 to 2007. And this was a study that we really wanted to look at the ethnic differences, specifically looking at Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. And nothing to disclose for this presentation. So I'm only going to spend one slide discussing what we already know about youth violence, because there's actually a lot in the literature right now. And there's a lot that we bring, those of us in the room that work in youth violence in the field, working with families and youth already from our experiences. So of course the problem, we know it's a huge problem. It's still there. It's getting worse. We know that homicide is a leading cause of death for youth all the way from ages 10 to 19. We know that according to the FBI, there are 14 million juvenile arrests annually, and of those, more than 600,000 are for violent crimes. And we know about risks. We know that prior history or exposure to violence, substance use, social relationships, academic performance, as well as poverty in the community are all risk factors, and there are numerous studies that continue to come out to add to this list. And finally, we know about the effects, not only for the youth themselves, but their families, our communities, things such as physical harm, social-emotional well-being, financial costs, and other things if you consider lost earnings, the cost of programming and interventions, pain and suffering, and reduced quality of life. And I went online and looked up one statistic that estimates that youth violence costs our country $426 billion annually. So in response to this, what information do we need to better understand youth violence so that we can really try to make way in our prevention efforts? First of all, we need to disaggregate data by ethnicity, and why is this? From the literature, we know there is a health disparity that African Americans, American Indians, Alaska Natives, and Hispanics tend to show higher rates of youth violence versus European Americans and Asian American and Pacific Islanders, or AAPIs. And I think many of us are familiar with the myth of the model minority that basically describes the perception that certain groups are better off academically, they're more economically self-sufficient, and thus leading to the implication that they don't need directed social services and that they can just be on their own and be successful for life. And there's actually studies in the literature that continue to persist today that perpetuate this myth that when they don't disaggregate Asian Americans from Pacific Islanders, these rates are actually still shown in the literature. However, if there are studies out there that some of which are done by our center that when these are disaggregated, there is a noteworthy difference. And of course, we need to look at prevalence across time. This is important because there have been disproportionate rates of population growth with respect to ethnicity, as well as differential acceleration and deceleration as far as violent behaviors. And in particular for the AAPI population, this is one of the fastest growing populations in our country. And there are predictions by the year 2042 that there will be no majority race in the US. So in response to this, our center looked at three purposes for the secondary data study. First, to determine the factor structure of the CDC's YRBS 9 youth violence items that may provide more parsimonious constructs. Second, to look at whether there are ethnic differences when disaggregating Asian Americans from Pacific Islander adolescents, as well as to look at gender differences. And then finally, to look at interaction effects with regards to ethnicity, gender, and time. So as far as the methods and the data that we utilized, we used data from the YRBS from 99 to 2007. We started in 99. This was the first year that the YRBS did disaggregate Asians from Pacific Islanders in the data set. And across the 5 years, there were over 72,000 participants in the YRBS. And this is the gender breakdown. The absolute difference is small, but actually because the sample size is so big, it actually is a statistically significant difference. And this is the ethnic breakdown, and of course we know from CDC documentation that this sample is fairly representative of high school students in participating jurisdictions. So these are the 9 violence-related items that the YRBS uses to attempt to measure youth violence. And as I mentioned, we conducted a factor analysis to see what constructs would emerge. So prior to running any analyses, I just wanted to note we did look across the 5 years. We compared question and response wording to make sure everything was consistent. And the only consistency we found, the inconsistency we found was that item 6 was added to the YRBS in 2003. We also rescaled the responses to make sure to make the responses dichotomous, so either yes, no, they had or had not engaged in that behavior. So we conducted an exploratory factor analysis using a random half of the sample, and this was done in M+ to make sure we account for missing scores, and from this, 3 factors emerged. Factor 1 about carrying weapons consisted of items 1 through 3 with a Cronbach alpha of 0.72. Factor 2, made up of items 4 and 5 about feeling unsafe with a Cronbach of 0.41. And a third factor emerged about fighting, items 7 and 9 with a Cronbach of 0.67. And we were disappointed by the levels, the Cronbach alpha levels, but we did also note that those factors were only made up of 2 items, so they were acceptable for our purposes. I also want to notate that because item 6 was not asked in all 5 years, it was not included in the factor analysis. And item 8 actually double loaded on both factors 2 and 3, and therefore we didn't include it in either factor. And we did do a factor invariance test to make sure that this was done with the second random half of the sample, and we confirmed that the determined factor structure held up for all of the different ethnic groups. So with these 3 determined factors, data analyses were conducted in SAS. And from here on out, I just want to note we did take into account the weights, so these data are weighted. So this first graph shows the overall total for the 3 means, factors 1, 2, and 3, as well as the mean of 3 factors. And this is showing that for factor 1, for carrying weapons, the average prevalence for the items was about 10%, factor 2, about 7%, factor 3, about 25%, and the mean of 3 factors about 13%. So while these numbers are certainly higher than many of us would like, they're not incredibly astounding. When we looked at males versus females, we dug a little deeper and we looked, and this was not very surprising for us. We know from the literature that males tend to self-report higher violence rates than females. And just so you know, we did look at significance over time, over the 5 years, and actually none of those were significant. So digging one level deeper, we looked at ethnicity for each of the 3 factors. And the abbreviations on the bottom are the different ethnic groups. So from left to right would be American Indian, Alaska Native, mixed non-Hispanic, mixed Hispanic, Native Hawaiian, and other Pacific Islanders, Black and African American, White, Hispanic, Latino, and Asian. And for all the graphs that I'll be showing, the next 3 graphs, it's from the group on the left has the highest rate and the group on the right has the lowest. So for factor 1, the first big thing was that Asians, their rate was actually significantly lower than all of the other ethnic groups. Secondly, the mixed Hispanics showed a significantly higher rate than the Black and African Americans. And then finally, American Indians and the mixed Hispanics rates were significantly higher than whites and Hispanic Latinos. For factor 2, this was feeling unsafe. And again, you can see that the Native Hawaiians and mixed Hispanics had a significantly higher rate than Asians. And also, Native Hawaiians, mixed Hispanics, plus the Hispanic Latinos and Blacks showed a significantly higher rate than whites. And finally, for factor 3, been in a fight by ethnicity, you can see that compared to the majority of the other ethnic groups, the white adolescents had significantly lower rates than everybody else. And of course, the Asians here, compared to everybody else, that was also statistically significant. So digging one level deeper, we did multiple linear regression to determine whether there were significant interaction effects. And one interaction effect was significant at the p less than 0.0001 level. And this was for factor 1, carrying weapon, sex by ethnicity. And I'm presenting here the male to female ratios for all of the different ethnic groups. And you can see the biggest disparity between males and females being with American Indians and Alaska Natives, with a ratio of 5.92:1, and the smallest ratio for mixed Hispanics, 2.68:1. And we also did a whole battery of statistics on each of the individual 9 items, which I'm not going to present today. But we did calculate any violence, which we defined as any individuals who reported violence for any of the 9 violence items. And again, not surprisingly, the Asians had a statistically significant lower rate than the majority of the other ethnicities except for whites. So what do these data tell us? Well, overall, 44.5% of the youth responded to at least one indicator of violence. In a word, still alarming, at least personally. And this does not even take into account other subforms of violence, things like bullying, which I know is a hot topic among those of us in the youth violence field now, as well as cyberbullying, which I believe CDC is trying to add into the 2011 YRBS survey. And in Hawaii, we know that bullying is an emerging problem. It's a big problem. In our 2009 YRBS, over half of our high school students told us that bullying was a problem in their school. And for middle school, over 60% of our students agreed that bullying was a problem in our school. And as far as cyberbullying, in a study that our center has just conducted with over 600 high school students, 56% of them reported actually having been victimized by cyberbullying in the past year. So certainly, this 44.5% may be actually pretty low. When looking at sex differences, we weren't surprised to see that males reported higher rates than females. However, we do need to look at the extent of the disparity between males and females. And this suggests that the experiences, environments, and also the cultural expectations with regards to gender roles are different for different ethnic groups. And this can have great ramifications when we're planning interventions and also considering gender-specific interventions. When we looked at ethnicity, we found that American Indians, Alaska Natives, and our Native Hawaiians and Pacific Islanders tend to have the higher rates, while Asians and whites tended to have the lowest rates. And this is just further evidence for us to disaggregate ethnic data by ethnicity, and even to look beyond these categorizations, looking into the subgroups, looking within the Asian American population, as well as within the Pacific Islander population, as well as our other populations as well. And this knowledge of determinants of youth violence will certainly enhance things such as planning effective programs, prevention programs and interventions, as well as policy. And one example that this is showing us is that we really need to look at social cultural factors relating to youth violence, especially the protective factors. We spend a lot of time looking at risk factors, but what are the protective factors that are allowing our Asians and whites to show such low rates compared to our other groups? And also, just personally for us in Hawaii, it's very concerning that our indigenous groups are the ones showing the highest rates. And it's in Hawaii, we're faced with this issue daily with our Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander youth. And we also see this with our growing immigrant population from Samoa, American Samoa, and Micronesia. And finally, this was not an expected outcome from our study, but we did find high rates for mixed Hispanic and mixed non-Hispanic ethnic youth. And there are potential ramifications here as well for prevention efforts for both homogeneous and mixed ethnic communities. And the literature is actually very mixed on the effects of mixed ethnicity right now. There are certain studies saying that there's no difference in risk for mixed versus non-mixed. And there are other studies that show that there is a difference, and the combination of the mixture actually makes a difference. So these types of inconsistent findings point to the need for further research so that we can more definitively define what circumstances may have allowed these mixed ethnicity group youth to have higher versus lower prevalences and the causes for these differences. So of course, no study is without its limitations. Of course, the sample size of Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander youth was relatively small. However, it was representative of the overall population in the US. our factors did comprise of very few variables, as I discussed earlier, which affected our Cronbach alpha levels. The individual youth are not linked longitudinally over the years, and therefore we couldn't do more sophisticated data analyses. And also it's plausible that one youth could actually participate twice because it's given every other year. So say a youth participates in the 9th grade, they could also participate again in the 11th grade. Of course, the data were self-reported and we all know the limitations that come with that. But one silver lining about this is that these data are less susceptible to underreporting of youth violence when compared to official records, such as arrests or emergency room visits. And then finally, we all know that the YRBS is only administered in schools, and therefore we know we are missing a huge population of our youth, those that just happen to be absent the day it's administered, but also those who have been suspended or those who have completely dropped out of school. So I'd just like to end with my acknowledgments, of course, to my center, the Asian Pacific Islander Youth Violence Prevention Center, which is funded by the CDC. Of course, our wonderful principal investigator, Dr. Earl Hishinuma, who's also my mentor and my statistician mentor as well. And then our wonderful staff at the center, our research associates and graduate assistants. And before I end, I need to put in a plug for a special issue that our center just put out about Asian American and Pacific Islander youth violence. And I actually have copies of the special issue if anybody's interested to pick one up after the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Janelle. Before we open up the floor for questions, there is a sign-in sheet going around. If you have not signed in, could you please do so? That helps us in programming for next year's APHA meeting. I see you made it back, Dr. Frank. So I would like to invite you to open up with questions for any of our panelists. Don't be shy. Come on. Raise your
It was administered in only English and Spanish. So, but basically that's why we restricted our analysis to blacks, whites, and Hispanics who are more likely to fall into the language that was used. Does that answer our question? Thank you. Yeah, for the healthy immigrant effect, the suggestion is that immigrants, when they arrive in this country, they are found to be healthier than the, within races even, than those who are born in the US, first found among the Hispanics, but that has been replicated among other groups. There's even a studies that had looked at blacks from the Caribbean, from Europe, and from Africa, and they still demonstrated that kind of finding. And this could just be another demonstration of that effect. In fact, my dissertation is on the same thing. I'm looking at adolescents, also in immigrant families, and using the ad health data. And I've been able to demonstrate within age 12 and 32 for Hispanics, for blacks, whites, and Asians, immigrants have an advantage within that year period. And the argument is that what is causing it? Most people have argued that is it selection? Some people have said that. Others think that they have a cultural advantage, that those who are not well acculturated may have an advantage at that. And I still accounted for that in this. So it's true that the healthy immigrant effect is what may be demonstrated here, but in my dissertation finding, I was a bit stunned that over that long span of age, from 12 all the way to 32, they still hadn't narrowed in any of the racial groups. And the ad health is a longitudinal data, so I hope as they add more waves to it, it might be interesting to see at what point there might be a change where the immigrant children might be worse off than the non-immigrants. So it's a clear demonstration of the healthy immigrant effect.
Great, thank you. Any other questions for our panelists? Yes.
Dr. Grace, I was curious, you said that stress is more predictive than depression. Did you do a depression scale, or is that something that's in the literature?
The question asked about whether we used a depression scale and the approach that we used, the answer is not in this version of the study. This was 2009 data that we looked at here. In the previous version,
great. Do we have any other questions for our panelists? Yes.
Thank you for that question, and I'm glad somebody brought it up because, like I mentioned, a lot of the literature is on risk, and we don't do as much research as we should be doing on protective factors. And certainly, based on the name of our center, we look a lot at ethnicity and ethnic identity, and that's one thing that we've shown to be protective in certain contexts. There was a paper put out by several of our investigators that showed that having strong ethnic identity is protective only when it's coupled with empathy for other ethnic groups. So the study actually showed that with just having a strong ethnic identity for your own group or your own ethnic group was actually a risk because it actually had built up more pride in their own ethnicity, but yet not making sure there was the empathy for other outside groups. But when it was coupled with that kind of empathy and understanding of other groups and appreciation for their cultures, then it became a protective factor. So those are the kinds of things that we're looking at. And there's a lot more literature that I can share with you after, but that's certainly something that we're interested, especially with the diversity, diverse population that we work with in Hawaii. So thank you.
If I could just respond to that briefly as well. One of the things that we found in our database, and I believe it's true nationally as well, is that the areas that are asked on the Youth Risk Behavior Survey that are intended to be protective factors, or we think of as protective factors, just don't work very well in the statistical analysis as protective factors. So, for example, involvement in after school activity, we think of that as protective, but we can't prove that it is through our data. Involvement in sports teams, there are a couple of other protective factors that are, service activities, volunteer activities. We think of all of those as protective factors, but when we look at how those relate to team health and team behavior, they don't work nearly as well. But one protective factor that really has been robust in its effectiveness is the trusted adult variable that I mentioned in my presentation. We found ourselves wondering if the trusted adult variable would be different than a trusted friend variable. So in the 2009 version of our survey, we asked about trusted friends. And if you recall during the presentation, the trusted adult variable appeared to work much better than the trusted friend variable as a protective factor.
Yes. Great questions. Any other questions for our panelists? Well, we finished early, so maybe they'll be willing to stick around in case you don't want to speak in front of the whole group. But once again, could we just give a round of applause for the group that presented today? Thank you.